Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I am Dandy. And you are Jody. Wait, no,
No.
that's also a name.
Yeah, but not the one that I use.
No.
So what's new? What's new in your neck of the canton?
Not in Canton right now, but it's our anniversary.
Yes. Well, not when this episode's released.
Well, as who cares? Like,
Yeah.
doesn't matter. Right now,
Yes.
it is the 5-year anniversary of the release of this first episode, the first episode of this podcast, which
Yeah.
was about nonsense and nothing.
Well, but then we went on to structure it some more, and we would pick movies, and we'd pick two movies, and then that didn't work out, and so we scaled it back to one movie, and then occasionally we just did no topic episodes when it was just too much, and then we did a couple of no topic episodes, and then it seems like we really should do a movie. So we picked very carefully for this celebratory event,
Yes,
Universal
to
Soldier.
commemorate the 5th anniversary, we picked a very special movie that is both near and dear to my heart and yours, and really gets down to the core of what this podcast is about, and really represents our tastes equally and effectively. No, we didn't do any of that. We picked one earlier today because we needed a movie, and it was easy. And I don't know. There were some options, and I said two of the options, and then there was a third option, and I was like, all right, whatever. And then you picked that one.
Yeah, well, we I think a main criteria for us for the celebratory anniversary super important episode is that it be a short movie. So we picked one that was an hour and 40 minutes and
We've reached the
change.
phase of the relationship where it's all about comfort and convenience. It's not really about, the passion really isn't there anymore, but
Oh dear.
we just want some comfortable shoes and a nice meal, and we want to go to bed early. It's one of those things.
I'm tired. I got a headache.
We
So,
just want to be rested for tomorrow. We have a very big day tomorrow. We're very
yeah.
busy people.
I picked Universal Soldier because we hadn't done something like this in a while, a 1980s action schlock fest.
A 1980 schlock fest from 1992, but yeah, it is very much on brand for us in terms of. Remember when we did that whole series of canon films? We got a lot of mileage out of that, and a lot of mileage out of people like Jean-Claude Van Damme. So I think this is actually surprisingly on brand for us.
Although this is Carolco and TriStar and Paramount and Studio Canal Plus, and I lost track of the number of people who claim to have rights to this at this point. Presumably because Carolco dissolved not long after.
Is
But
it pronounced Carolco? I've been saying Carolco in my head.
it could be Carolco. I honestly could not tell you because I've only ever seen the logo and they didn't like have a jingle or anything.
It's a good logo.
Maybe they'd still be in business if they had a jingle.
If people understood how to pronounce it properly.
Yeah.
See, all of their fan mail was going to Carolco and not Carolco down the street at the other PO box.
Yes. And
Because
when they
mail
would.
goes based on the phonetic pronunciation of words.
Yes, exactly. It's just like when you look at the how do you pronounce a word in a dictionary, and there's the phonetic little spelling there on the side.
With the little dots and the carrots and stuff.
Yes, that's exactly how mail works.
Yeah.
But
That's why the US postal system is really so screwed up, and everyone doesn't understand why their mail is so bad, and they just blame the lazy workers. But really, it's not that. It's they have to go based on the dictionary phonetic spelling of each word to try and figure out who gets what mail. And there's a lot of subtlety to it. So, some stuff's going to slip through the cracks.
Unfortunately, that's the case, and they're no longer with us. This was something that they released towards the end, and as you pointed out, it is 1992, but it does feel like a very 1980s thing. And indeed, this production entity was operating a very 1980s overextended kind of way
Yeah.
when it was putting this out there.
I feel like the script came from 1983 and was just kind of on the shelf for like a decade, and they were like, well, we're kind of out of stuff to do, and Jean-Claude Van Damme hasn't done anything in a little while, so we got this. You want to just shoot this? And they're like, yeah, all right, fine. It's okay.
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea what the story is behind getting this created. But this is a thing that happened, and it pulls from seemingly other 1980s tropes and things you might see in similar movies. So we got something that's kind of RoboCop-esque. We've got a little bit of the sort of a Terminator-iness thrown in there, and we have some Short Circuit for good measure for the comedy elements. It's a really strange mix of things, a melange of different stuff. It doesn't seem to have a consistent tone at any point, other than hyperviolence and then yuck-em-ups. It is curious in that way. And I don't know, because there's three writers, exactly who to attribute what to in this process. I do know, of course, this is Dean Devlin, who would go on to be a collaborator with the director of this, Roland Emmerich, on many, many other things. And we did Independence Day one time, and we did not do the sequel to that. But I guess we could flip on somebody at some point. Roland Emmerich is a very weird guy, for a lot of reasons. Don't Google Roland Emmerich pool party. He always does these action movies where there's action that's depicted in a really cheeseball, over-the-top, ham-fisted kind of way, and it somehow works, much in the same way that Michael Bay's flair for action stuff works, although I would say it's not the frenetic machine that Michael Bay is. He definitely takes a little more time in planning things out, so you can see that somebody will definitely be stuck with this other thing in this other scene. But it is as close as you could get to a Roland Emmerich B movie with a B movie budget, because I think he just went on to make B movies with bigger budgets.
There's a lot of blow 'em up stuff in here, and they've got that very special custom built semi truck that they use in the movie that had to cost a fair bit of money, and they got all their suits and their eyepiece things, and they don't look entirely made out of plastic and spray painted like 5 minutes before they went on set. So
yeah, I mean,
there's a decent budget here.
Well, $23 million is not a lot, but you know, they made 32. Yeah,
that is not a lot. I feel like it would be difficult to make this movie for $23 million.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess a lot of it really just does take place in, like, that car and
various desert spots located in Arizona and,
yeah,
I think, California.
You got a bus, you got a semi-truck, you got that old Buick or whatever, and then you got a couple of roadside bars and a dam.
Mm-hmm.
And a hotel, I guess.
Yeah, and you just blow that hotel to crap. And a gas station.
Don't forget the gas station, which also blew up.
And then one day of filming with Jerry Orbach.
Oh yeah, right. He's there.
Yeah, that was weird when I saw him come in. I was just like, wow, paycheck time, huh?
He didn't even say anything cool, like nobody puts Luke in a corner or something. I don't know.
No, nothing like it.
He could have had a line where he like winked at the camera or something.
Yeah, this movie was on, I feel like, nearly every other day on cable in rotation at some point when I was a teenager. Of course, heavily edited for television.
Are you very familiar with this movie?
Oh yeah, I've seen this many times, but.
Oh my God.
But usually not in a single sit through initially. And then I watched, I think, the whole thing one time. And then since then, it's only ever been whenever it's on TV. And I'll just pull a Dan and just stop and watch the mayhem for a minute.
Wow. So this truly is a landmark episode for us, because our roles have been reversed. Because I think I may have seen some of this movie one time. I am not familiar with this movie as you are.
Oh, I express no familiarity with it. As I said, I have no idea how this movie was made. I've seen it enough
times to know it.
I have observed the outcome on cable television, pan and scan. But it's...
Oh, how did they pan and scan his shiny butt?
I think it was omitted. But this is...
Did they cut out a scene where she's looking at the back of his leg and he just bends over at the middle and looks at her between his legs?
That is a funny scene. What a way to shoot that too, huh?
I'm sure there's a lot of shooting movies with Jean-Claude Van Damme where he's just like, hey, I can do this thing. How can you work this into the script? And he's like, hey, I can keep my knees locked and put my head between my legs and look backwards. Can we work that in somehow? And Roland's like, I guess. We'll just have to frame it low enough so nothing's hanging in the top of the frame.
Just so you know, I'm super flexible. We get it. You can stop high-kicking like, everybody.
What was that movie where there was like a bunch of water spilled on the kitchen floor and then like... an electrical wire like fell down and electrified the whole floor, and he basically jumped up and did the splits between two counters to hold himself up off of the ground so he wouldn't get electrocuted. And that's just another one where Jean-Claude was just like, I can jump up and do the splits and put both of my feet on the counters, so I'm just kind of hovering in the air. Can we work that in somehow? And they're like, yeah, sure, maybe there's water and electricity and stuff.
Yeah, you described the scene to me. I have not seen Time Cop, but you described it to me and told me it was Time Cop. That's what I remember you saying.
I mean, I've seen Time Cop, and there's some scenes from Time Cop. I don't know if that's one of them. Maybe it is.
Okay, it's possible. I cannot dispute it. But this is
Look at that. This whole movie is Arizona. How did I not know this?
I don't know. The grocery store they go to is a Bosch's.
Bash's.
Whatever.
Is it in here? Which Bash's did they go to? Oh, it's not listed on IMDb.
No, I have no idea.
You got Kingman, you got Sedona, you got Chloride. I'm sorry. You got Cottonwood.
The town of Chloride?
Yeah, Chloride. I just saw this. Where is Chloride? I was just near or looking at Chloride, Arizona. Where is this?
How did it get this charming name?
Probably mining.
Oh.
Probably mining some things. Oh, it's on the way to Las Vegas. I drove past it. It's very small. It's mostly a lot of semi-mobile homes parked in the middle of a big desert area. It's next to Grasshopper Junction, if you're looking for it on a map, which is apparently next to something on the map that is just labeled Santa Claus. I don't know if that's the name of this. It's not the name of the street. It must be the name of this little region right here.
It's where St. Nick summers.
West. Oh! This is where the landfill is.
Santa Claus landfill.
The Mojave County landfill is right next to something called just Santa Claus. The exit on the road is called Santa Claus. They must do that because it's like an ironic thing. Like, oh yeah, just take a right turn to Santa Claus and you get to literally the largest landfill you've probably ever seen in your entire life. Like, we drove past it, and it was like, my God, what is that over there? Like a copper mine or something? It's massive. It's like, no, those hills are just full of trash.
Oh.
It's very large.
Oh.
So you got Chloride, so you got Clarkdale, you got Ash Fork, Verde Valley, Prescott. Wow, they went all over the place. Lake Mead.
Well, Lake Mead.
It really didn't seem that they benefited from going to all of these cities.
No, but it gave them interesting scenery. Especially the chase scene at the end where they seemingly cut from one venue to the Grand Canyon.
where they're on that like really narrow road with the canyons on both mm-hmm. sides. That's Sedona. Actually, I know where that is. I was looking at that, and I was like, oh, that looks like it's in the Slide Rock Valley, where you're on your way between Sedona and Flagstaff, and it is. That's weird.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting, I guess, to somebody.
Wait, never mind. I'm incorrect. Dirt road where bus was pushed over into the Grand Canyon. That point with the Eagle Formation is Eagle Point, where the Glass Skywalk is now located. Somebody was very specific about this one particular location on IMDb.
The glass sidewalk, isn't that the on the Vegas side, I thought? No?
In the Grand Canyon? No, it's just like I think it's like a semicircle where you can walk out hovering over the canyon.
No, thank you.
If you're a lunatic. Yeah, it seems like it's not particularly the grass sidewalk, but it's just the fact that, the rim doesn't really have like gates or anything around it. Mm-hmm. Like once a year somebody falls in.
Ugh.
Yeah. It happened like 6-8 months ago.
No, thank you. So this movie does not start in Arizona, technically. This movie starts in Vietnam.
When that came on, I was like, wait a minute. I don't know. You can't really tell from the poster or whatever, but the image I had in my head is of a movie where they have like future guns and lasers and stuff. And I was like, wait a minute, is this, it's like a flashback? I mean, it is a flashback, but it's like, is this going to jump forward to the year like 2415 or something? And they all got laser guns and stuff. And it's like, no, not really. They just have funny things on their face.
Yeah.
I don't know what movie I was thinking of.
Not sure. We'll find out someday, and I'll try to remind you that you said this.
Yeah, when we work our way through the Jean-Claude Van Damme catalog, which I didn't realize. I thought he was more 80s heavy, but he's clearly very more 90s heavy.
Yeah, he was big in the early 90s.
Remember
a Street Fighter movie?
Yeah, that's here listed under his credits.
But we've watched a couple of his movies. You selected Bloodsport, I think.
Yeah, that's 88.
And then what was the other one?
Kickboxer 89.
Yeah, that was literally the same. I don't even remember which one was which. So they start in Vietnam. There's Jean-Claude Van Damme in the jungle, and he's talking to some guy who's freaking out. And then he comes across all these bodies and stuff. And there's Dolph Lundgren with two Vietnamese civilians that he has captured, and he is threading ears that he's cut off of his own men and other people onto a necklace so that he can wear. And so he's clearly not with it, not altogether. Jean-Claude Van Damme is, I think, far too generous in this scene with the whole like, let's talk this out thing. I would be like a little more on the maybe make sure that this lunatic doesn't have a weapon in his hand.
He's fairly naive for somebody who's been like in the heat of battle in Vietnam for an extended period of time.
Yes, and this also starts your first couple questions in the movie about accents.
There's it's like so these guys are gonna pretend to be Americans, huh? That's not a good idea.
No. Well, I mean, Dolph, to his credit, pulls it off a lot better than he did when he tried to cover it up previously on other endeavors.
There were a couple of lines in that grocery store where it was like, what word did he just say?
Yeah.
That was not English.
I said better, but not perfect. Jean-Claude Van Damme, I don't even know what he tried. And they tried to incorporate some of that into the car scene later, which I did laugh at. You know, what accent is that? Where are you from? You know, Montreal, France. And he's like, what accent? And it's like, come on. Hilarious. But
he did okay. He did okay. He tried. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of his lines were very quiet and mumbly. And as I mentioned to you in the Slack earlier, I had this thing like cranked up really loud on my TV to try and hear what the hell was happening, but all of the explosions were scaring the dog, so I turned it back down to a reasonable volume and just turned closed captions on, because everyone was mumbling. Everyone needed to be re-recorded in ADR. I guess maybe they just ran out of budget for ADR, so they just didn't do any of it. But yeah, it's hard to understand what anybody say, whether it's accent or just volume.
Yes, especially like the scenes with Jerry Orbach where they're inside, and I guess seemingly we're on the other side of the room from where the mic was, because they would also walk over to the other side of the room and you could hear them a little better, and it's like, oh god, come on guys. But
we hid the microphones in the lamp, it'll be great, and they walk away.
But this goes poorly for everybody. The civilians, the guy civilian is shot in the head. And the woman civilian, Jean-Claude Van Damme, tries to rescue her, and she runs a distance before a grenade is lobbed at her by Dolph Lundgren, which is a very strange way to kill somebody on a like a one-on-one basis. But you might be
they
thinking...
They must have gotten a discount on grenades. That's really the only explanation for a lot of the stuff that happens in this movie. But and then his retaliation is to bayonet Dolph, which is not the most efficient way to use your rifle.
No.
Because then Dolph shoots him, and then as he falls backwards, pulling his bayonet out of Dolph, he then shoots his rifle at him, and they sort of kill each other that way. But yeah, that was dumb. And then they're laying there dead, and then you know, some special forces guys come in to clean the place up, and then a guy pretends to talk on the phone to nobody in particular very badly because he doesn't leave any space for the other person on the other end of the phone to say anything.
It's very community theater.
We've got a code zebra, which, you know, I think in the order of operations, I know they were trying to make it sound kind of secret, but I feel like one of our guys went AWOL and killed everyone on our side and their side would be higher up than Z, and maybe just not use Z because, you know, you gotta have some room to grow because you never know what's going to be happening later. So
yeah, well, I'm sure he just picked it because he thought Z looked cool, and then he didn't realize he would have to say zebra. And it would just remind everybody of a nice, you know, quadruped animal with fun stripes. But
they have fun stripes.
They get all zipped up in their body bags, and they're going to be put on ice for what I think the audience knows is an experiment to bring them back to life, but the movie sure takes its time with.
Yeah, it's fairly obvious that the two lead actors aren't going to kill each other in the opening scene, but the opening scene does do a pretty good job of establishing the tone, question mark? I mean, I don't know if you want to call it a tone, but just like the depths that the filmmakers are willing to go in this movie. So there's a lot of gratuitous, mindless violence. There's some cursing. There's some killing innocent women stuff. So you know they're going to go there. They're really going to get into it throughout this movie. So get ready.
Yeah, and it's also establishing the psychological motivations of the two main characters here, because we clearly see the reasons why Dolph Lundgren does all the stuff he does later in the film, and we see the reasons why Jean-Claude Van Damme defies orders and breaks his programming, basically, when he remembers mm-hmm. this.
And honestly, it's actually a pretty good story device that, like, the military guys, they just roll up and they're like, well, we got a bunch of dead special forces guys and we're doing experiments, so, like, let's grab them. And they were not privy to the events that occurred, so they don't know that Dolph and Jean-Claude Van Damme had some bad things occur between the two of them, and there may be some scarring memories between the two of them that could impact their experiment later in life. So, because how could they possibly know that? And that's really the basis for the story. And I think that actually really kind of works pretty well. I mean, the part where Dolph is losing his mind and cutting ears off people is a little spotty, but, you know, the relationship between the two that then, like, later comes out of their subconscious when they break out of it is actually pretty good.
Yeah. Now, does it necessarily need to be as violent and over the top and gratuitous as it is, especially with all the blood in the ears and stuff? No.
No, this very easily could have been a PG-13 movie.
And it also invokes the horrors of war and traumatic stress, but it doesn't really treat them seriously. It just uses them as motivation for the insanity of Dolph Lundgren's character and the desire for Jean-Claude Van Damme to suppress and leave the events behind him. So that it doesn't, you know, it's like if you gave this idea to, like, a better writer, you might get a different movie out of that. but it just serves to do a certain specific thing in terms of provoking these two people to go against each other again.
Right. Yeah. The horror of war is not like your sergeant might kind of go crazy one time and start cutting the ears off people. The horror of war is that war is horrifying. So, yeah, you know.
So
it didn't really need to go there.
Yeah, it is not treated super great. But then we flash forward to present day, 1992-ish.
It says present day, and I was trying to figure out, I'm like, I didn't look at the year on this yet. So present day is when exactly? It's not particularly clear.
This does feel like it's a little earlier than 1992. But we're at the Hoover Dam, and there's stuff unfolding with hostages, and they got to get a special elite special team in to do their stuff, and their guys are getting dropped a mile away, and they made it there in 4 minutes. Oh my god. And it's like, oh, they're 8 seconds late, and it's like bad writing, but whatever, that's not the point. We're also introduced to Ali Walker's character, who is a late news journalist, who is a bit of a chain smoker and is ornery, I guess.
This character is like in so many movies. Like, this is literally what's her name's character. Oh god, I can't believe I'm about to cite this. It's Stranger Things mom's character from Mr. Deeds. It's the same thing.
I've never seen Mr. Deeds.
It's what's her name? From Stranger Things. What's her name? She was in movies in the 80s and 90s. Alien 4. She's the robot.
Winona Ryder?
There you go. It's Winona okay. Ryder's character from Mr. Deeds.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the weird lazy journalist who's skating by, and then her job's on the line, and she's got to pull a real big story. But it turns out she got in over her head, both with the story, and she kind of sort of is in love with the subject, which I appreciate that they didn't really dive super deep into that. It could very well have just been like, I feel really bad that the government has abused you and taken your life away, and I want to kind of help you find your family again, which is why I care about you. And also, I'm going to kind of make a story out of this initially, rather than just going like, oh my god, I love you, Jean-Claude Van Damme, because your butt is very shiny and your chest is very large.
Yeah, but...
By the way, while we're talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme, I told him I would relay this information, but I was speaking to friend of us and the show, Matt Alexander, earlier, and he referred to Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren as melted candlemen, and said they both looked like someone covered a muscular SpongeBob SquarePants in cellophane. And I gotta say, he's not wrong.
Well, especially if you look at a current photo, they're apparently still making directed, you know, video sequels for these movies.
Oh, are they making the what you who's it, the old man fighter army guy movies,
the Expendables
number 6 or whatever?
Yeah,
there you go. The Expendables. Are they on like 8 of those now?
I think there's 3 of them at least. But they were also in Universal Soldier direct to video sequels.
When was that?
Well, apparently they rebooted the direct to video sequels.
Sometime, a direct-to-video sequel and then a reboot?
Several and then a reboot. So you got, let's see, what is it? The film grossed $36 million against its budget of $23, spawned a series of films, including several rather poorly received direct-to-TV films, Universal Soldier The Return, which has since been removed from the series canon. I can't believe there's a series canon.
It was a sequel, and then they retconned the canon.
And then followed by Universal Soldier Regeneration and Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning. The film is considered a cult film among fans and critics.
So The Return was 99, Regeneration was 2009, and then Day of Reckoning was 2012. How did I miss all of these?
Because they went to the Blockbuster right before it closed. Wow. And then you didn't see them.
Wow. Because, Jean-Claude Van Damme has a shaved head. That's interesting. He's very short. They got that one guy, Andrei Arlovsky, who was in some stuff. Anyway, I feel like this is a, I don't want to call it a franchise, but it's a story that could be continued and reused for things, because like it's not that far off from like a Marvel movie. It's kind of like a Captain America style thing, except the Captain Americas are like soldiers with PTSD who kind of like break from their commands from time to time and start going after. It's Winter Soldier. It's a whole group of Winter Soldiers.
Yeah, we're the Incredible Hulk one with Ed Norton and what's his face.
Yeah, who played the Bad Hulk in that one?
That was the Abomination, and it was played by Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs guy. I'm blanking on.
Oh, Tim Roth, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right, because he was like badass army dude who did a lot of running, which is an interesting look for Tim Roth. And then, yeah, he got all big and yellow.
Gray.
Was he gray? I thought he was kind of yellowish.
Yeah, well, I mean, just like a weird subsurface thing, with depending on which street lights he was in front of, but he was supposed to be gray. But they've done this stuff before. I mean, since Frankenstein, basically, of here's your reanimated servant to do your bidding. Oh, no, it doesn't do it. And then
but it doesn't even have to be the reanimated servant. It could just be like somebody who volunteered and then they had to have their memory wiped or whatever. It's Winter Soldier-y, except his arms aren't metal. Mm-hmm. They're just they inject themselves with incredibly large syringes of, was it purple goo, green goo?
Green. Right. And, you know, it's also very, I would say, given the time frame, much more similar to RoboCop, although Jean-Claude Van Damme does not seem to have the acting range of Peter Weller.
Doesn't have the acting range of Peter Weller pretending to be a robot.
Yeah.
It is a very RoboCop thing, right? Because you got a guy damaged in the line of duty, but he was a good, loyal dude, and they want to give him a second chance.
And
nobody really falls in love with RoboCop.
No. But anywho, so that we got the thing going on at the dam here, and all the super soldiers bust it all up. One of the soldiers gets shot up, and he has to be taken on the truck for medical care, and they all go back.
Big dude, Ralph Mueller from what do you call it? Gladiator. He's big and scary and cool.
Cool. So he's
fully don't care.
He's in a box full of ice at one point. So it's good for him. He needs to open his eyes. But they go back to camp. Our protagonist, Allie, who's playing, what's her name? Veronica Roberts. Mm-hmm. She gets this idea that she's going to get her job back by getting a really good story on, the soldiers that did all this. And so she's going to break into their encampment and then just take some photos. And so she sees...
Right, because there's this really weird thing where the sergeant guy who's in charge there, or colonel or whatever, there's a press box where the press are during this live terrorist hostage situation. But then he's like, no, you guys can't interview any of my soldiers because they're very private people and they have families and I don't want to expose their names to people, which is him trying to cover the fact that... they're all reanimated dead people, but he's doing a very poor job by virtue of the fact that the press is there. And then going along with this is like when they kill all the terrorists or whatever. One of the hostages apparently looks like the innocent Vietnamese woman that Dolph killed, so he kind of freezes up a little bit. And then when they get all back to base camp, we see their cool little SUV or semi truck trailer where everyone goes in the cryo freeze and gets cool mist blasted at them, and you know, they're shirtless, so it's very cold and shiny. And then they put green goo in their necks to help them erase all of their memories, because they figure maybe he froze up. Because he starts mumbling about how somebody was innocent, and they're like, well, it's probably an old memory. Let's just erase his brain again, because all he's supposed to do is take orders and not think. And that couldn't possibly go wrong, having his memories sneak back through. And then also at the same time, you got Dolph kind of giving him a little bit of side eye before they all get their neck memory eraser stuff. So you think like, well, clearly he's already starting to break. And Colonel Guy mentions that this is their third successful mission, which is really weird that there's this incredibly publicly known secret super soldier organization that's breaking up terrorist acts around the world and or country, and people are aware of it, but also they're not supposed to know about it.
A curious thing about this is the we see some of the reluctance of the scientists who work there, chiefly Woodward and Garth, not Wayne's World Garth, different Garth, but they had the general guy is all like, yeah, no, just do the thing. We were not going to take him out of rotation to study this obvious flaw. Just just reprogram him and it'll be fine. I worked in RoboCop. And so they do. And
just
then
erase more memories. He'll be okay.
he
turns
won't,
out not okay.
He won't wander into an old house and look at a real estate thing. But so the reporter stumbles upon the big like pelican case that they put the one guy who got shot in, and he's
right,
just
right, because their super
nice.
Secret semi truck is like not secret. It's just like over there, and they're like, well, they're still parked over there. Let's like go get a news story or whatever, so I can get my job back. And she's just sitting there with binoculars, and there's a guy like looking in a big. Pelican case, and then his hands are all bloody, and then he walks away. He's like, hey, somebody come help me with this. And she's like, oh, I'm gonna go get this story, and opens the lid, and there's the big German guy with a bunch of bullet holes in him in a bucket of ice, and she keeps taking pictures of him, and then eventually he wakes up and she's like, oh, this is weird. Mm-hmm. And then alarms go off and everybody starts chasing them. And
yeah.
I do appreciate how quickly that she's like, start the car, we gotta get out of here. And they hop in and they try to speed away, and like they immediately crash and flip over. It's like, oh, that was a very bad idea.
Yeah, well, it's also interesting if you think about how fast all these soldiers put all their gear back on.
Yeah, exactly. That was my first thought when I saw them all show up fully decked out in their gear. It's like, wow, they can swim a mile and a half in 4 minutes, and they can get dressed in like 3 seconds.
Yes, they were ready to roll, quite literally, because they have a car, and they have this situation where they capture her and her associate, the camera guy, who was driving the car, not actually using the camera, and they just are on their knees, and she's like, here's my, you know, press credentials, you know, blah 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 blah, and then Dolph just goes a little screwy and shoots the guy in the head.
Yeah, they're like trying to grab the film from her or whatever, and the camera guy's like, hey, don't do that, and like jumps in front, and it's like, why did you think disobeying all of these guys pointing guns at you was a good idea? Because yeah, Dolph shoots him right in the face, and then she's like, how could you do that, we're innocent people here. And it's like, lady, did you look at these people? Do they appear like they are abiding by some sort of like local laws? No, that is not the case. But of course, Dolph shooting him in the face, just as he did in Vietnam, triggers a bunch of incredibly obvious flashbacks.
I think you mean footage from earlier in the film.
Sure. footage from the flashback from earlier, whatever.
Yeah,
so he
it's one of my pet peeves whenever somebody is like having a flashback that it's our audience perspective
earlier in the movie.
Yeah. It's just our audience perspective of something that we saw earlier in the movie. It's just like, hey, you remember that scene? And it's like, this isn't my flashback. This is Jean-Claude Van Damme's flashback.
The perspective, not the fact that we literally already watched it 15 minutes ago.
Yeah. It should be from his point of view. If you want to like dredge that up and show us that he's reliving something, he should be reliving it. It's not for us, but whatever.
It should have just been a slow push in on his face, and then we hear the sounds from earlier in the movie. We would have been fine, but yeah, he freaks out. He grabs reporter lady and throws her in a car and starts driving away. But like, you know, he's still sort of he's under the influence of the brain drugs. So like the colonel guy is yelling in his radio earpiece, "Stop the car!" And he stops the car, and then she's like, "What are you doing? Like, let's get out of here." And he's like, "I follow orders." She's like, "Well, I'm telling you to drive forward." And he's just staring at her. And then she stomps on his foot, and the car goes. And then she pulls his little camera off of his head and throws it out the door. It's like, it's really kind of poorly conceived that if somebody knocks the radio out of their ear and nobody's there to give them orders, that you have these crazy super soldiers that are just kind of like blank slates to do whatever they feel like. Because, you know, maybe they fall, maybe they bump their head, and, you know, the thing comes off their ear. Like, you got a plan for this eventuality, guys.
Well, it doesn't seem like they plan for any eventualities, just going off of how the events go in the rest of the film as things slowly go haywire. But
it's just a very public alpha test of these crazy super soldiers that can kill anybody really quickly.
Yeah, the general doesn't really seem too concerned. And the scientists threaten the general, and they're like, we gotta, you know, go public with this thing and say what happened. And he's like, no, we're off the books. Not even those, you know, wimps at the Pentagon know what we're doing because it's so off the books. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. So how is this financed? How do you have clearance to do anything? But
I mean, what do you need clearance for? They're already dead. You just cruise down to the morgue and you slip the guy a 20, and then you take the biggest, buffest guys you got, and then you put them in the cryo freeze and inject them with green goo, and then suddenly they belong to you.
Yeah, well, except for the part where somebody paid for all that R&D and this sweet Winnebago that they have, and someone also is coordinating with them, with the military, on doing all these terrorist disruption things, and they're literally in the news, so someone needs to be approving this somewhere. There has to be someone.
They need some better PR people. They are really not flying below the radar at all.
No stealth here. And they,
even if their semi truck is painted matte black,
well, you can't see it at night. But there's a lot of this movie takes place during the day. They didn't think about that one. They should have had a daytime semi truck, and it just painted that one beige. But they all assemble back in the thing, and they're gonna follow him because there's this tracker that nobody knows about, but there's always a tracker. And reporter lady and our soldier guy go to a motel in Ashfork, Arizona, and they check into this motel with a guy who nickel and dimes them over every little tiny thing until they finally get a room, and they get in there. By now we know that cooling is required for some functions, and there's a little thing beeping on Jean-Claude Van Damme's wrist, and he's not feeling so well.
His gigantic Apple Watch that only tells him how hot he is.
Is it hot in here, or is it just my Apple Watch? But he gets right up in front of that AC unit and then strips nude, and she doesn't seem to notice at first. She's too busy trying to call somebody, but at this point, the general has determined that they are in Ashfork and that the entire town will lose its phones. And so they do. And they're going to surround them with super soldiers and go in guns a-blazing. What could go wrong? And it does. Unfortunately, they blow up literally everything, shooting holes through stuff, and Jean-Claude Van Damme has to ram through different walls in order to get to the final wall, which is a cinder block wall. Oh, no! And then they crawl underneath the comforter of the couple that was having sex in one of the rooms. And when Dolph Lundgren and his team go through there, they don't suspect that anything's amiss when there is two human beings that are underneath the comforter in a bed with two other human beings. Now it's a four human being bed. And it seems just like a totally normal bed. I don't know why that would be invisible to them, but apparently.
Well, the heat signatures. It's just a big... I'm sure the bed is very warm from their activities. So it just kind of masks it all, and, you know.
Yeah, their vision is based on plot. So they need to get out of there and go find them and whatever, and they got out. But then the gun comes up from underneath the comforters and reveals that they were there the whole entire time. He asks for the keys. He gets the keys. They hop in that Chevy or Buick or whatever, old car, and then drive that through the motel and ruin the lobby. And the mother of the hotel owner mutters something about the security deposit. They make their way again off into the distance. And they try to figure out what to do about a tracker, because he determines that they must have some sort of tracking device. So they stop at a gas station, Joe's gas station or something, I don't know. And at least the guy's name is Joe. And they use the restroom where Jean-Claude Van Damme, of course, strips nude again, because he really can't do that enough in this movie, apparently.
You got to get your bang for your buck when you're putting Jean-Claude Van Damme in a movie. You want to see that shiny butt, and you want to see those pecs.
Yeah, yeah. And this whole scene takes place between his legs, she's down there feeling him up to try to find some sort of a lump that might be a tracking device, and she determines that something in the back of his the back of his thigh. Like basically his hamstring, there's a lump there, and so that must be it. And then he takes out a knife, and
there was another decent comedy moment there where she's poking around and he goes, is that supposed to be there? And she's like, yeah, that's good, that's supposed to be there. I don't know, I would have started you know, with the other appendages and, you know, last resort. Whatever. I mean, you know, she's in charge.
Yeah. But she's using her worst judgment, as she does. But she figures it out, though. And so he carves himself up and then he asks her to stick her hand inside and pull out the tracker. She does that and is totally grossed out by it. The scene is less fun now because there's blood everywhere.
And then, this is an amazing part where, the super soldiers show up at the gas station again, cause they're tracking. They surround the office or whatever, but like Dolph notices that there's a bunch of like ice on the outside of the ice box, because of course this gas station in the middle of nowhere also has one of those ice boxes that has like 40 bags of ice for sale inside of it that look very freshly bagged up. But they hide in the trunks of all of these abandoned cars that they filled with ice to hide from the body heat scanners. So they can sort of ambush everybody and shoot them up and then blow them up in the gas station, which is completely ridiculous. But since Dolph noticed the ice at the base of the ice machine, he hides in the back of the car that they identified previously and tries to garrote Jean-Claude Van Damme while he's driving away, which, I don't know, for a guy who could, like, with one hand grab other people's faces and break their necks, not exactly the move he should have gone for.
No.
No, he probably could have killed him more effectively, but this gives him an opportunity to drive, you know, 50 yards down the road and do a callback to earlier when Jean-Claude Van Damme was being a robot boy and saying, put your seatbelt on, it's for your safety. And the lady's like, what is the matter with you? Why are you talking about my seatbelt? Because he drives into a very large boulder and ejects Dolph through the windshield in order to escape.
I think you mean a dummy that looks like it was wearing the clothes.
A very large dummy dressed in Dolph's clothes. And it flies through the windshield very far, even though there is no damage to the car, and then they drive away. Mm-hmm. And this is about the time in the movie where, you know, we kind of know Jean-Claude Van Damme is kind of like off his meds and like doing his own thing. He's like kind of snapped loose a little bit. Reporter lady asking him all these questions is kind of helping. He's trying to figure out what's going on. But apparently ejecting Dolph through a fake glass windshield snaps him completely out of his super soldier brain meld thingy-mabob, because he just basically stands up and he's like, I'm Sergeant Andrew Scott from Vietnam, and I'm in charge now, or I'm going to cut your ear off. He's just like, snap, I'm out of it.
Dan, as you know, severe head trauma gets memories back or makes them go away.
It does both things.
Yeah, it always works like that. It's
get you a car crash, you can do both.
But he also gets to this headpiece knocked off, so he's not. He has an interval of not receiving direct orders, apparently this is enough of a disorientation that he's falling back on some of the memories that he'd been thinking about since. Jean-Claude Van Damme had started to diverge from his own programming.
And the colonel's like, hey, what are you doing? Get back in the bus. Like, we got to go. And he's like, nah, and shoots the colonel. And he's like, cool, I'm in charge now. Later.
Yeah, because this is also specifically the thing that seemed to be setting off Dolph in the beginning, which is that pulling out of the area that, you know, he doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to give up on the mission. The mission is all that matters, and he's going to, you know, make sure the mission goes through, and there's not going to be any traitors, and anybody who will go against the mission is a traitor, and he's going to kill them. So obviously he kills the general with a bad version of the squib from The Godfather.
Oh God, it's very red.
it's very red, and also it's so translucent. It's not as thick or voluminous as it should be for the caliber of weapon that has just gone through his head. It wasn't like he was shot with like a teeny tiny little Derringer or anything. But anyway, the
oh, also we missed the fact that like when they were hiding in the trunks of the cars and they blew everybody up, all of the super soldiers are rolling around on the ground on fire.
Oh yeah,
and all the scientist guys are running out there with fire extinguishers trying to put them out, and they're all like, ah, we gotta save them. They're $250 million a piece. These are very valuable extra crispy Universal soldiers. So, you know, they're dragging him back in the semi-truck and trying to save him, and the scientist guys are distracted while Dolph is shooting the colonel in the face.
Yeah, and so the scientist guys are very surprised when they see Dolph come onto the truck, and he's got...
And he just sort of swaggers back into the truck with his unbuttoned jacket, and he's like, well, 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 how's it going, everyone?
Yeah, and he's got the colonel's bloody ears that he puts down. I'm sorry, not... Colonel, whatever. I don't know. General.
Yeah, he's Colonel Perry.
Okay, Colonel Perry. His ears get put down on the thing, and then Woodward and Garth are like, "Oh crap!" And so is the other guy. And one of the other officer guys is like, "Hey, you're supposed to stand down, so you got to do that now." And it's like, you know, I think this is that scenario where you just shoot him first, especially since you could like fix him later theoretically if you needed to, but he doesn't. And so he dies. And then one of the tech guys tries to come over with a handgun that he pulled out of like a cabinet. And Dolph punches through his face mask and seemingly through the front of his face, and then twists his head from the inside.
Yeah. I mean, that takes some extra skill to punch through the mask and then break the neck with a single hand when you don't really have a lot of room to rotate. So you just gotta rotate quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
impressive,
is
what it is.
That's why that's why he does what he does. That's why he is who he is. This leaves just Woodward and Garth, and a couple of the wounded soldiers, and that's it. They just start following, our wacky, Dolph Lundgren's orders, to do all this stuff and to pursue.
They go to a roadside bar, and then of course all of the locals see this giant military guy with ears around his neck, and they make jokes about it, and then he kicks three of them in the face and then grabs the tiny guy by the neck and is like, hi, where did the people go that I'm following? It's a procedural chase of movie. It's very Terminator. A lot of the music cues there do sound very Terminator-y too. Like every time that they do a cut to somebody menacing outside, you got that sort of like choo-choo sound that they got going on from Terminator.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with Christopher Franke's works, but you know, there he is doing his stuff. Oh wait, this is the Tangerine Dream guy. Oh, he did all the Babylon 5 stuff. I am familiar with his work. I lied.
Of course you are. I was about to say, this is uncommon for you to be unfamiliar with a musician in a movie.
Mm, yeah. Well, I mean, he mainly went on to do Babylon 5 for the rest of his career.
Well, you know.
But he was in the band called Tangerine Dream, and they did the score for Ridley Scott's Legend after he rejected Jerry Goldsmith's score.
Legends is the guy with the big horns.
Yes, it's Tim Curry as the big horn guy, and Tom Cruise.
He's red.
Yep.
Oh, Tom Cruise is in it too.
Yeah.
Is he big and red and with horns and
no,
stuff?
No, he's just Tom Cruise. But it's a fantasy movie. But whatever.
Sure. So they chase each other from place to place. I forget what happens where. Jean-Claude Van Damme is when Dolph ends up at the grocery store. Like, his guys get shot up or something, and he's like, damn it, these guys are getting shot and dying, and I gotta fix them because I need my boys. So he just drags them into Abash's and then, like, yells at some child, like, where is your freezer? And he throws them in the freezer so they can regenerate, but one of them is not regenerating, so he's just, like, yelling at this dead body and kicking it on the floor of a freezer, which is an incredibly... healthy thing for him to be doing. And then the big German gladiator guy, who by the way was also in Beer Fest, he was the German guy who ate the beer stein. He's eating a raw steak to get his energy back, which you know I hope their cryo freezer like helps with salmonella and stuff too, so whatever.
I'd be more concerned with the E. coli with the beef.
Sure,
but he seems fine. That scene keeps going because we had the diner scene with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Allie when they're trying to figure out the next step because they stole some notebooks.
Right. She takes an incredibly long phone call outside in the payphone, because payphones in 1992. And Jean-Claude Van Damme doesn't know how to eat, so he's watching some old toothless guy eat a steak and some mashed potatoes, and he just mimics him. And then suddenly he realizes that he likes food, and food's real good, and it helps wake him up a little bit. So he orders all the food and is eating all the food. And then the waitress at some point says, how are you going to pay for all this, you weirdo? And he's like, I don't know. What do you mean pay for it? And then she sicks like 8 real big buff guys who take their jackets off because they were playing pool in the middle of the day in the back on him, and who just conveniently happened to be in the one diner there. And he beats them all up just so there's some sort of action scene where Jean-Claude Van Damme can do his weird showy karate moves. And then Allie can come back in after her phone call and give him a "oh, you" face while he's like, what? I'm just over here eating some popcorn.
I do like the part where he still has that crumb of bread in his mouth in between fighting various people. And he's just like still chewing, going back to chewing every time somebody comes up to fight him. But anywho, they
he's an alien. He doesn't know how food works, and he's fascinated.
Right. It's just like Starman, but more violent. And so they do the thing where they get back on the road and they go to Utah. And they are meeting up with Jerry Orbach here, and he's the doctor who was in the notebook who was behind all this, and so they track him down to this veteran
the
hospital.
The notebook that they stole, not the movie The Notebook, for clarity.
No, not the movie The Notebook. and they, the Jerry Orbach explains that, you know, they found a way to regenerate tissue, but it makes the tissue basically, like, the metabolism run super hot, so... Yeah. If they don't cool down,
they overclocked the dead guys.
Yeah, and if they don't keep them cool, they basically will just die from the heat. And also, the reason why they wipe their memories is because there's a very strong chance they'll get stressed out reliving past things and have a stroke. And that's in Jerry Orbach. The maid, I guess, or assistant or something. I'm going to go with maid because of the apron. She comes in and says, hey, now's a great time for you to turn on the television so that exposition can occur. And so he does. And that's where you see the news broadcast from the Bosches, where you see security camera footage of Dolph Lundgren causing a ruckus. And that's when Jerry Orbach says, oh, and he's obsessed with Vietnam. He never wanted to leave, and he's trapped there now, still fighting the Viet Cong. And the situation that Jean-Claude Van Damme has is that he just wanted to go home. That's all he's wanted. And so he's kind of like stuck in that mode now.
This is where they breeze past one of my favorite parts in the plot where, reporter lady is like, how could you be a part of this in good conscience? And doesn't he just like say, like, I asked myself that every day, and then like that's it. Like you created these abominations out of men with PTSD and serious problems, and now they're gonna have strokes and die if they don't cryo-freeze themselves all the time in the midst of murdering lots of people. And you don't feel particularly responsible for some reason. You're just like, well, sorry.
Yep. Got to go back to my tire swing. But they get out of there, and they're going to a bus transfer terminal station, I guess. And he has tickets for her to go on the bus. I forgot how he got money.
They didn't explain it.
No.
He just walks up and he like pulls some bus tickets out of his shirt and hands them to her, and she's like, "What? Bus ticket for me? Why? What's this for?" He's like, "For you to go home, for you to be safe now." Oh boy, it's like King Kong protect Jane. Blah. That's stupid.
Yeah, and I do like the what they do here, where they do the fake out of the bus drives away and reveals that she didn't get on the bus; she was standing behind it. But that,
but also there's like the entire police force behind her pointing guns.
Yeah, see, because the first reveal is cheesy and cliche. The second reveal made me laugh because that was
pretty good.
That was pretty funny.
This Roland Emmerich guy, he's got a little bit of skill.
Sort of. And so they
least his shutter was at 180 degrees in this movie. I'll just give him that.
So setting real low bar, but they have they're all captured now, and so they go to a correctional school bus, and their enormous police detail dwindles to two guys in one squad car in the back, and one guy in the squad car in the front, and one driver of the school bus.
And they're all like fat old guys who would be like the guards at like a bank in a small town. They're all like, holy crap, look at that over there. There's a man with a machine gun. I got my little six shooter pistol that I'll try and nope, I got shot in the face. Sorry.
Yeah. Which explains a lot about what happens here, because the Winnebago of Death catches up with them. I forgot to say, back at the grocery store, before the grocery store, Garth figured out that Woodward was going to adjust the pressure of the serum injector thing to kill what's his face when he goes in there because he's overheated. And Garth says, "No, you let me do it. It'll look better that way." And I'm like, "Better to whom? Are we worried about the appearances now?" But anyway, he goes in there and he does it. Except he gets a needle through the cheek because he's dead now, and that's a pretty gruesome death for him. And then Woodward, when they're stopped at another thing, he's like, "Hey, dumb regenerated soldier guy, here's a grenade. You will do everything that the Sarge says, right?" Yep.
Sergeant Dolph told you to hold this for 20 seconds and then drop it. And he pulls the pin of the grenade and hands it to him, but he's a giant meathead, so he grabs the grenade and the doctor's hand at the same time, and he won't let go. I don't know why.
He doesn't just say, "Let go of me, just hold the grenade."
Or like, why when he let go, why didn't the doctor continue to hold the spoon down on the grenade? Because that would have worked too.
Yeah. It's really unclear why that needed to unfold in this manner, other than they wanted to also just kill him at this point. So he dies. The bus has the explosion inside, but still operational enough for the driving part later. And there's one soldier left to do the thing. And they so they catch up in the truck thing, and they have the one soldier and Dolph, and that's all they got going on. They smash.
And yet somehow this scene goes on for so long, because they're ramming people, they're shooting. Dolph is like hanging out the window throwing grenades into the bus, and then reporter lady is throwing them back out the window. Meanwhile, Jean-Claude Van Damme is trying to pick a lock with a bent hanger that he got out of the seat cushion or whatever, like a bent spring. And it's like he throws so many grenades that she throws back, and then eventually they're like, "Well, we don't want to do this trick too wrong, so let's just have him just keep throwing grenades at the car that blow out on the outside and just sort of shakes everybody." But the bus keeps sort of driving down the road and swerving a little bit for like 5 minutes, and then eventually it goes off the road and they're off-roading and there's nobody driving because the guy's dead. And then they go from the highway to the side of the highway to being like on the salt flats of Nevada, mm-hmm. to then suddenly being on the precipice of a canyon in Sedona. And then eventually Jean-Claude Van Damme gets through the door and is driving. And then he's like, "Okay, you jump for it and I'll get him out of here." And she's like, "What? No, I don't want to jump out of here." And he's like, "No, seriously, jump. It'll keep you safe." She's like, "I go wherever you go." And he's like, "Oh, that's very sweet." And then he opens the door and shoves her out.
Well, he says, "I'm gonna go with you too," and then he doesn't.
Right. Yeah. Which didn't really make a difference,
no.
Because like 5 seconds later, the road ends and it does a U-turn and he starts to turn and the semi truck is just like, "I'm gonna ram you," and they hit him and flip over the bus, and then somewhere in here, like the guy the other soldier driving the thing gets shot up, so like. Dolph is just kind of in the passenger seat as the semi-truck drives into the tipped-over bus, just knocking them both off of the cliff and down into the canyon.
Because what happened is Jean-Claude Van Damme gets up on the side of the overturned bus and shoots through the window with the cop's pistol that was in the front seat. And that apparently is enough to penetrate whatever reinforced glass they used to protect the front of that, and that's what kills the driver, and that's why it drives full speed through that bus and over the top, over the cliff edge. And then that other squad car comes up with the one guy, and he's like, "Freeze! I gotcha! You're coming with me, because you obviously caused all this." And it's like, nope. And so Allie elbows him to the stomach and then punches him in the face, and he falls over, which seems unwise because he was literally pointing the gun at Jean-Claude Van Damme, so it could have gone off. But whatever.
Yeah, I feel like if somebody's got they got their trigger on a pistol, don't punch him in the crotch.
No, I wouldn't make any sudden movements, to be perfectly honest with you. And so anyway, they incapacitate him. She incapacitates him and says, "Oh, I got three brothers," and then gets the stuff out of his wallet, and they go to the car, and they're going to drive the car to the parents' house because they got that information from Orbach. And this is when you cut from where they are to Louisiana, because apparently his accent is because he's from Louisiana.
He's French Creole, as you would expect.
Yes. The Bon Temps Roulette. Mon Cherie. So anyway, they get there, and it's your traditional farmhouse. They're greeted by the actor who plays the father, Rance Howard, and Lillian Chauvin, who's actually a somewhat famous actress lady, who's been in other things.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, this was towards the end of her career where she was just taking paychecks. She of course, took a paycheck to be in Star Trek Deep Space Nine and played Vedic Yassam. She was in the episode that I just did with Scott the other week.
Oh, good. Was she really? We're tying things back together. That's good. That's
good. Time is a flat Bon Temps Roulette. And so they...
I would type that in as a title suggestion, but I don't know how to spell whatever the hell you just said.
I don't know how to do that either. They do the thing of saying, "Oh, hey, it's great to see you, and I'm so happy you're here, and aren't you going to stay the night?" "Nope, I'm out of here." And because... literally no one checked to see if the super soldiers that can survive anything survived. We are greeted to the second instance of Sarge popping up in the back seat of a car that nobody checks, but somehow walks around the passenger side window of. Dolph Lundgren does not seem like the kind of person you could just like hide on a back seat.
I mean, it was this was the police car. This wasn't the very large Buick. The Buick probably had plenty of space back there, but this is, maybe it was the, the little separator between the front and back seats to kind of hit him a little bit. Actually, I don't think it had that.
It didn't have that. This is a squad car that had no ability to detain anyone in the back.
Mm-hmm. It was a squad car only in that it was painted to look like one.
It said sheriff. But so she's captured. And then Dolph Lundgren, Jean-Claude Van Damme staring at photos, and then there's a noise, and then he turns around, and there's a kitchen fire, and everything's knocked over, and all the power's out, and that all happened in like 2 seconds. So that was pretty sudden. And cut to the farmhouse barn where Dolph Lundgren has the parents, and he throws them on the ground, and he's shouting stuff about the enemy and stuff as he does, and Allie's there, and she has some sort of makeshift gag over her mouth so she can't speak. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme finds like an old hunting rifle, I guess based on memory, and then he's going to take that out there, but he immediately puts it down. So don't worry about the hunting rifle, everybody. This is not Chekhov's hunting rifle.
He's like, "I'm going to fight you like a man with my fists." And then he quickly finds out that Dolph has been, juicing on green injections, and he's very strong, and he can Punch him so hard that he flies back very far on a wire into a wall several times. Like, this fight, like, I get it. This is the climax of your movie, and this is the fight. Like, you thought he was dead, but he's not dead. You knew that was going to happen, that he was going to fight some more. But this fight goes on so long that it should have ended so many times. And when you see the this weird sort of makeshift like combine grinder thing behind him, Amanda wasn't even watching the movie. She like casually walked through the room. She's like, oh no, is he going to get punched into those spikes behind him and die? And, you know, eventually,
yes,
they have to be there behind him. And then they have to go into the barn and then fight some more and then come back out of the barn and then fight a little bit more and then get pushed onto the spikes and then try to reach off of the spike to pull Jean-Claude Van Damme onto the spike. And then he's still on the spike, so he turns the grinder on, which I thought it was slightly gratuitous that they bothered to show little chunks of Dolph Lundgren coming out of the grinder on the other side.
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, it's on par with some of the other stuff in this movie, but it was just like, oh, that's somebody threw a beef shoulder into a grinder and it came out the other side, and that's, there you go.
Yeah, that felt unnecessary. But what was weird about this scene too is, you know, like you said, he's injecting himself with the juice so that he can beat him up, and then Jean-Claude Van Damme gets another syringe, another ridiculously comically oversized syringe, and injects himself with that, and then it takes instant effect, even though he was basically dying 2 seconds ago. And so now he's not only on par with Dolph Lundgren, but is superior to Dolph Lundgren and beats the crap out of him with several flying kicks, which is, I have to say, not the tactical choice I would employ here, because if you do a flying kick with both legs, you know what happens? You're not standing up on the ground anymore after that. But
well, I thought you were going to say, like, Dolph is just going to, like, sidestep you and you're going to land on the spikes yourself, like, foot and crotch first.
No, but this, I think what makes this feel so long is not just the length of it, but also the repetitive nature of things. We're seeing a lot of the same maneuvers executed over and over and over again, especially with the throwing of people, the high kicks, so many high kicks. And
it probably looked really good in the blocking. And then they're like, this is kind of long. How do we cut it down? It's like, well, there's a sequence. We can't really cut parts down because they're on a track from A to B to C. And like, we can't just snip a whole chunk out because then you won't know what happened. So they definitely could have reduced this scene by like 4 minutes, and probably the whole movie, if we're honest, by like 15 or 10, and it would have been exactly the same thing.
And
maybe a little bit more enjoyable.
What pushes him to even engage in this battle at this point is because we have him reliving the moments of the woman in Vietnam who is horribly killed by that grenade, because Dolph throws a grenade after Allie when she frees herself by cutting loose her restraints, and it is presumed that she has died, and they treat it rather callously for a bit, and then after the parents are okay, they say, don't worry about us. And that's such a weird thing to say. I'd be like, I'm worried right now, please worry about me. But this is an opportunity.
I love that he didn't even look at Jean-Claude Van Damme. He basically was like, don't worry about us, and he kind of turns his back as if to say, like, I don't know what kind of weird freaky crap you've been doing for the past 25 years, but like, please stop, please give us some space right now.
Yeah, well, they
had a reincarnated version of my son.
They had an excellent view of the meat grinder from there where they were sitting, so I'm sure they're not really the mood to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. But he goes out to check on Allie's character at this point, and she's face down in the mud, and he's like, oh, no, wah. And then she's like, okay, quippy line, I'm fine. And that's it. Everything's great. Everything's coming up. Millhouse.
Yeah, how do you feel? Like a 50-year-old. Because there was a joke earlier that she said he looked pretty good for a 50-year-old, because he died when he was 25, apparently, and now he's 25 years later, so.
Yep,
and then there's a really weird rap song over the credits.
So weird.
that I didn't watch very much of because we had to come do the show. But yeah, you know, honestly, for 1992, this was probably not that bad of a movie. This was probably kind of like a cool indie hit to go see. I mean, I realized it didn't make that much movie, but it really could have been a lot worse somehow. I don't really know how to put my finger on it, but it could have been way worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good like B movie. It is, you know, not horribly regressive in any big way. It's not a deep thinker of a thing, but it doesn't try to pretend to be. It sets up its action. It's action elements that you need to know and to follow along with, and it does them, and that's it. And it's pretty inexpensive, and it you know makes the most of its budget. So I say it meets all of the standards for what they need to do.
It's got a Terminator 1 vibe to it in that like there's some interesting storyline universe stuff going on here, and the execution is a little rough. But like you could see this and go like, yeah, that was all right. They could do another one of those, and if they you know really put some time and effort and thought into it, it could be pretty good.
Yeah, but they didn't, and it wasn't. So don't worry about that. But
I guess when you're hinging everything on Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren, although they put everything on Arnold in Terminator 1, and they gave him another shot, even though he also had a weird accent and didn't really know how to act very well.
Yeah, I mean, and the accent is never really explained in Terminator 2, which is the high point of the Terminator movies.
Well, it's explained later, remember?
Do I remember?
Was
that in 3?
It was in one of the abominable movies later where they stole the voice of one of the military guys, or they like synthesized.
Oh,
they
yeah.
said like it would be.
Yeah, that was in 3. I forgot.
Okay. It was like some regional dialect, and like, yeah, that'll be good, right? That's a mix of something and something. And then one of the guys had Arnold voice.
So anyway, this is fine. This is a fine thing that we watched to celebrate.
It was way more fine than I expected it to be, which is
you're damning it with faint fine.
Yeah. In the beginning, my head was kind of in my hands a little bit, and I was like, eek, ugh. And then as it went on, I was like, yeah, all right.
Jason got back from a business trip he was on, and he walked in somewhere around the last three quarters of it, he's like, why are you watching this bad movie? Why is it so loud? And I was like, because I can't hear the dialogue. They turned it down. and so he's like, why do you have to watch this bad movie? Can't you just like read the Wikipedia page and just like hang out with me? And I'm like, no, that's not how we do things on this podcast. I pay so much attention to these.
We're very serious professionals going on 5 years now, Jason.
Yeah, and he said, why do you gotta pick a bad movie then? Why can't it be a good movie? And I said, well, sometimes we do bad movies. He's like, I don't understand. You're picking them. Why do you have to pick the bad ones?
It's like, you know what? I've been asking myself that same question, Jason.
So anyway, that's a fun and delightful experience. And I think on that note,
yeah.
we'll pop a ice cube in this. Put it on ice. Chill out.
Put it where?
In the back of a hamstring.
You know. You gotta get that core temperature down, so
yeah.